We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode and catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
The Bernstein and McKnight Show.
That's what people elected us to do. They didn't elect us to, you know, stand on principle or petty politics. They need us to be together and get done.
Yeah, no question about it. I think everyone feels the same way. And I think that when we look at what is happening.
My wife just looked at me and said, "What are you doing? You said the S word on radio."
Well, I heard David start giggling.
We know.
Yeah, we got a dump button. Don't worry.
Middays on the Score.
That is absolutely phenomenal. That
no
is
nonsense.
An all-timer. All-timer in the history of this radio station. You talk about what crisis can do, what broadcasting from home can do to make things real when you're sort of not sitting in a studio or you don't have the video feed lights on you. Boy, that's just great. The realness of that, the mayor of Chicago dropping that live on Sports Radio 670. Oh, that's so much fun. We're Bernstein and McKnight. We are 2 hours in. We are on 9 to noon, Monday through Friday, staying with you through memorably difficult times, but we'll get there. You know, a reminder to everybody as we get close to what people think is going to be the peak of the infections here and nationally, perhaps internationally, to stay safe, to keep washing your hands, keep practicing safe social distancing, do your best to wash down surfaces. If you're going to go out, there is now new guidance that maybe covering your face is going to be advised in some way, shape, or form. Stay tuned for some of that and listen to the doctors and experts as they try to keep some consistent messaging on that. But we are talking about the passing of longtime White Sox broadcaster, former White Sox closer, Ed Farmer, who died last night at the age of 70. We had a conversation with Dan Evans, a longtime White Sox front office guy. And he was terrific talking about his memories of his dear friend. We had a conversation with Ryan Dempster as well. I also want to remind you of what we have going on these airwaves for the next 10 days. We're doing 17 days of the Cubs championship playback, and it started yesterday. But tonight's game is going to be NLDS Game 2, the Cubs and the Giants. Spoiler alert, Cubs beat the Giants 5-2. But these are going to be interactive experiences. Ron Coomer and Pat Hughes joined by Joe Ostrowski live prior to every game. There's a pregame show. Then after the third inning, they reconvene to interact. Same thing after the seventh. And then after the game, they take calls about that game. So it's an interactive broadcast of all of these 17 games that lead to the Cubs World Series championship. And it's right where you heard him first here on Sports Radio 670 The Score. And that is going to be tonight at 7 o'clock for NLDS Game 2.
I listened to the last, I don't know, 6 or 7 outs or something like that last night and listened to all the postgame show with Joe and Pat and Ron. And I thought it was really funny to hear Pat talk about having watched these games over again and even Game 7 of the World Series. And he's getting all worked up. Pat Hughes, who was there and called it and told you what happened on our airwaves, is getting worked up watching some replays of that historic run. And I feel the same way. I told you that I watched Game 7 a couple of weeks ago, I don't know, a week and a half ago, something like that. And Pat pointed out the same at-bat, Dan, that I pointed out to you after I had watched that game. It's Aroldis Chapman to Jason Kipnis and how two of those pitches weren't absolutely pummeled out of the ballpark to win the World Series and end the game befuddles me to this day. He just missed them. And you get all worked up listening to these games over again, or at least I did. They'll have game two of the NLDS against the Giants tonight. Early this morning, though, the mayor of Chicago, you heard it coming back from break, the mayor of Chicago, Lori Lightfoot, was on with Mully and Haw. And the three of them discussed, obviously, what's going on in the world, country, and city, and talked a lot about, and to Chicago residents like us, about what the best practices are for these times. And you'll hear some of that. But also, before the mayor got off the phone with the fellas, she could not leave before she had to fire off a couple of hot takes as it regards the locals in town. Here's the mayor of Chicago, Lori Lightfoot, with Mully and Hawkins.
I'm a huge sports fan. And, you know, during this time when there's no play, I'm still, you know, reading multiple sports blogs every day and keeping up with the NFL draft and, you know, wondering if Ryan Pace is awake up there. just saying. But look, we are a great sports town. We're a sports-loving country. And of all the moments, and there have been many tough ones, you know, seeing the NBA cancel its season, hockey then followed, the fire. I mean, I was really looking forward to being out in Soldier Field on March 21st for the homecoming of the fire, and baseball, both the White Sox and the Cubs. Thinking about my White Sox, maybe this will be the year. Yeah. You know, and looking down the line at football, and you know, will we be able to start training camp on time? I mean, these are big moments when you're a sports fan, and obviously the way that sports is embraced and loved in the city and what it contributes to our economy, these are real things, and not just a notion. So I'm hopeful that our modeling is right, that we will see the peak of this in mid to late April, and then we'll start the winding down. But the truth is, you know, for all the science and all the data, and we've got some of the best minds in the world working on this for Chicago, there's so much that we don't know and so much that we're not going to know until we're in it. And, you know, I saw Dr. Fauci's comments from the other day that there might be a second wave, you know, this coming fall. That's horrifying to think about. But whatever we do, as we've been throughout this journey, we're going to be guided by the science. We're going to be talking to the epidemiologists. We're going to be looking at the modeling, and we're going to make the hard call that we have to.
Mayor Lightfoot, thank you. We really appreciate your time, and we appreciate you talking to our sports fans, and certainly we appreciate your leadership. It's a wonderful thing to see, so thank you.
Thank you, Mayor Lightfoot.
Thank you. My pleasure, and maybe I'll come back and we'll actually talk a little sports. I'm still mulling over the Nick Foles.
What do you think about that?
Well, you know, I think it's a competition trade and not a starter trade. But, you know, and, you know, obviously people are all over the place about it, but we paid $18 million to Mike Glennon, which has got to be top five worst all-time trades. My God, put me out there, will ya?
No kidding. You know, hey, Mike Glennon's available. I think the Raiders let him
Lord.
Go. So.
Well, of course. Of course. Go home and coach, you know, Pee Wee football, man. But, you know, look,
I got a feeling if we like it.
I like the trade. I would have preferred that they traded for a starter, you know, Teddy Bridgewater.
Right.
I had some hopes about that. But, you know, this is we're not willing to give up on Mitch yet. We're going to have competition in training camp. And, you know, look, Foles, as you know, has caught lightning in a bottle a couple times. And we'll see. But we got to solve the quarterback problem. We can't keep having our defense on the field three quarters of the game getting gassed. I mean, you know, obviously the numbers were down last year on the D overall, but not a surprise when they basically had to carry every damn game. It's just too much.
Do you know how many Chicago mayors have said we have to solve the quarterback problem?
I got a feeling we would really hear some language if we watched a game with you. I think.
Thanks so much.
Yeah, thanks a ton.
Yeah, I'm being restrained here, and I'm sure I'm going to get admonished again when I walk out of my little cubby here. I'm a passionate fan like everybody who fills those stadiums on home Sundays, and it's hard to go from the highs of two seasons ago to see what happened last year, and you know, give both quarterbacks adequate reps in preseason. Don't hold them back. I thought that was just a mistake. But we gotta be better on the offensive line. Our defense is still very solid, but the offense has gotta do its part, and we need something more than just an occasional game manager.
Hot damn, Lori Lightfoot, the mayor of Chicago. Wow.
That's fantastic.
That is just great.
I'm just thinking we can. Calls.
I was gonna say, that's Mayor Bob on line two. I mean, if she should do pre and post with Hub and Olin and Mantle, Big Cat. We could have her pop in there. I was expecting her to be breaking down quarters coverage or whether or not you're properly disguising a zone. I mean, that's really good.
Put me out there. Well, yeah.
I'd like to get her audition tape for the post-game show, though. We need to hear her slap the table and scream line stunts, Doug, a couple of times, see how that kind of dynamic works. Did you see, by the way, I know you have, but the news that Ian Rappaport had on the Nick Foles trade with the Bears, it came out just as we were wrapping up the show yesterday. The contract rework makes him a very different-looking quarterback, at least financially, than we had imagined he would. With the trade official, the contract goes to $24 million over 3 years, with $21 still fully guaranteed, $6 million available in incentives per year. Every dollar earned of incentives also escalates the next year's salary. Nick Foles can void the contract in 21 and 22 based on performance. And Rappaport writes one more thing. Another note on Nick Foles, the trade itself is a big win for the player. He got to keep a preferred team after being paid $30 million for one season in Jacksonville. Plus, he keeps his $21 million guaranteed from the original contract, and he can hit free agency sooner given the deal's new voids.
Okay, let me ask you something. Would he agree to that if he were not told he was going to start?
Honest to God, I can't tell. I mean, if you're looking at a guy saying, you can void the contract and get out of this, I suppose you could make an argument one way or the other that if they look at him and say, all right, you're going to come here, but we're going to start Mitch for a couple of games, and if he fails, then you can come in, start, and then you're a free agent. Or you can come in here and build the whole thing up. I mean, what it means, what it really means, Dan, is that Nick Foles wants to be able to get out of Chicago after 1 year, regardless of whether he's starting or backing up Mitch Trubisky. That's what it means.
I guess you're probably right, but it's still in his best interest to play. Or a cynic might say the best way to build your value in the league is to not play. It's the Mike Glennon rule, right? Let people think you're better than you are because you can't prove that you're bad.
Yeah,
or maybe he's betting on that no matter what, he's going to have more value just because. That's a great question. I don't know.
The end of the story is the Bears gave up a conditional fourth-round pick for a pending free agent and a guy who has now restructured his contract to make it more acceptable than ever to a lot of people, not myself included, but more acceptable than ever to a lot of people that he backs up Mitch as opposed to takes the reins as the starter first week of the season, whenever that happens. You're doing all of that. You're reworking that contract. You're allowing yourself the shade to start Mitch Trubisky over Nick Foles. You're doing all of that and giving up a fourth-round pick? Why? That's so much to give up for the shade of being able to start Mitch Trubisky. That's just, that's a lot.
It is, but that underscores the go for it nature of this year. This is damn the torpedoes. They're in it, and I think Ryan Pace knows. I compared it to the Thelma and Louise moment here, where we're getting pretty close to him knowing what the hell, why not? And that's why the draft is going to be cool. That with all the higher risk involved, maybe there's some of these picks. It's like screw it. I don't care about the future. I'm either trading these guys. If I'm going to go down, I'm going to go down with my picks, high risk. If they blow up, I don't care. I'm done here anyway. So long, suckers. I think that's really part of it. Before we go to break and to bring in Chris Ranji, I also want to ask this. Maybe this is a topic for another time. Have we ever had a Chicago politician talk sports with the same kind of passionate specificity that Lori Lightfoot just did? I mean, I can only go by the time that I've been on the air. I know that Mayor Daley was a genuine White Sox fan, like a legit Southside Bridgeport De La Salle High School White Sox fan. I flew on the plane with him back from Houston the morning after the White Sox won the World Series, and he's beaming ear to ear, sitting there with his black White Sox hat on, and just, I mean, that was a happy, happy, happy White Sox fan, so I know that's real. But some of the malaprops, whether it's Rahm Emanuel calling Ron Santo, there it is, yep, or the greatest of all time, the greatest of absolutely ever, was when Governor Ryan referred to Mike Ditka as the Hall of Famer Dick Butka. it could not have been more perfect. He literally said, he's introducing, it's his long-winded introduction. They're standing outside, and I bring you the Hall of Famer Dick Butka. And Ditka took his... just didn't cut off. To his credit, Ditka is suppressing a laugh. Even he found it hilarious. And he's walking up there trying to keep from smiling and laughing out loud. But we go from that to somebody who knows exactly how much money the bad bum-ass quarterback was paid and is still angry about it. That's just really cool.
No, it is. To answer your question, no, I don't think we have had a politician that's more meatball-y and knowledgeable at the same time. But really, the premise of this was just to play the drops that we did. I mean, let's be honest about it.
Chris Ranji has spent a lot of time around Ed Farmer, who passed away last night, and that's been the subject of this show. We switched things up. We went a little bit off form, whatever our new form is sort of evolving into now, to make some room for some phone calls, some memories, and some stories. And Chris Ranji, the longtime White Sox pre- and post-game host, is going to join us next with his thoughts on the passing of Ed Farmer. We are Bernstein and McKnight, middays, 9 a.m. to noon on Sports Radio 670, The Score.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
And now your host, Chris Ronji.
It is not Chris Ronji. It's Ed Farmer alongside Darren Jackson from Progressive Field in Cleveland as Chris Ronji is on other duties right now.
It is Chris Ronji actually joining us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. You can follow Chris on Twitter at Chris Ronji. He is the afternoon guy, along with like six other people who host with him or something like that. And, 101 in St. Louis, and he's with us now. Tough day, Chris. What are your thoughts on the passing of Ed Farmer?
Well, so I heard about it last night that he was not doing well, and you know, I think what I heard originally was a couple of days, maybe 3 days. And it must have, obviously it happened very quickly. I didn't even know he was sick. And for me, that's the thing that's most bothersome, if we're being honest here, is that I didn't know. And I had, obviously things are a whole lot different now because of what's going on, but my plan was to catch a game at some point this summer and to go see him and see DJ and see everybody else at the ballpark, but obviously that wasn't going to happen anyway. But now losing him, it's even tougher. And you know, people always tell you that if you ever have the thought to give somebody a call, do it, don't wait, because you never know. And it was probably, I don't know, maybe a month ago or maybe a couple of months, and I thought about him. And I was like, I got to give Farmio a call. I got to see how he's doing, because I haven't. I think the last time I saw him and DJ both was in May of 2018 when the White Sox played here in St. Louis, and I went up to see him. And I wanted to give him a call, and I didn't because I was in the middle of doing other stuff, and I thought I'll do it later, and I just never got around to it. So you know how they always tell people, if you're thinking of somebody, give them a call. Don't wait to do it, and here's your proof.
Sorry that's the case, Chris. I know how much you loved working with him. I wonder how much you remember the first time you met Ed.
The first time I met him was when we were in the old building, the old NBC building, when the Score was over there. And he came in, and we had just gotten the contract for the White Sox. And I always thought he was, you know, he was like 6'9". So I always thought he was an intimidating presence. And the way he talked, it was a very dry delivery. And you guys know him, and Connor, you know him well from working with him as well. But he just had this really dry delivery. And if you didn't know any better, you thought he didn't like you. So I probably went the first couple of years not really sure if Ed Farmer liked me or not. But after a period of time, you realize that he does. It's just the way he talks, and he was one of the most caring people I have ever worked with. And I don't know if that always comes across to people who didn't know him, but he really was. I mean, none of that stuff was phony. He was a very unique individual. And I'm positive I will not know anybody like him for the rest of my life. He was an incredible dude. Ed Farmer was a really, really good person. And for people who did not get a chance to know him, and that's odd to say, because it seemed like Ed knew everybody. Like, I mean, he knew everybody. I was amazed at the amount of people who would come into the broadcast booth. Like, one time we were, this is a sidebar, one time I was in there, and I was up on the broadcast level, and I left my booth, which was a couple of doors over, to go into his, and I opened the door, and Robert Wool is in there. Like, Arliss, you know, Batman, Robert Wool. I'm like, what the hell? Why is Robert Wool in here right now? But he just was. Ed knew him. I think they lived in the same neighborhood or something. It was just, he was really an incredible person. And I don't think people got to know that side of him very much. And I'm happy I got to.
Talking with Chris Ranji on the Bernstein and McKnight Show, the bottom of the hour, brought to you by Northwestern Athletics. The Wildcats would like to thank all those working throughout the COVID-19 pandemic, including postal workers, CTA staff, and airport staff. We appreciate you. You know, I made reference to it a little bit earlier, but maybe you could shed some light on it. What do you know about the relationship or lack thereof that between Ed Farmer and Hawk Harrelson, and what was going on with these very strong-minded former players in these booths that were right next to each other for so long?
Well, honestly, the booths are a couple of, two or three down, and it's a little bit farther of a walk than you think, right? So it's not like they were constantly going into the TV booth and the guys in the TV booth were coming over to the radio booth. I saw them interact a little bit, and it always seemed to be friendly to me. I never picked up on anything like they didn't like each other. The only person that I know of that Farmio wasn't a fan of, or they had some kind of thing, and I think everybody knows about it with Rooney, right? Like, I think everybody knows about that, but everybody else seemed
to get
along.
Maybe not. Don't assume that people do know about it.
Oh, I don't think they liked each other very much. I don't know why, but I don't think they did. I don't really know John Rooney at all. And I've met him, I met him a couple of times, but I don't know him, and he seems fine to me. But for whatever reason, there must have been some tension there. And but that I never picked up with Hawk. It always appeared to me whenever I saw the two of them interact, they were on good terms.
Yeah, I'm with you, Chris. I never saw the two of them around much because my first season covering the White Sox and doing your job was the first season that Jason Benetti came in to do a lot of White Sox television. So if the White Sox were on the road, that's where Hawk was. But when we were at home doing broadcasts there, Benetti was at the ballpark. So I didn't see much of the interaction either. Although, you know, you mentioned if you didn't know Ed and then kind of made the joke that everybody knew Ed, I said earlier this morning, and I wonder if you think it's true or maybe even have a story around it. If you met Ed, there was nothing. He wasn't putting on for anybody. He wasn't giving anyone any different than Ed Farmer. And I really appreciated that about the guy.
Yes. You knew exactly who he was. He would not put on a face for you. And then, okay, so I never had happen where a visitor or anybody would come in, and you know how people are. When you kind of don't like somebody or you're kind of not interested in being around somebody, and then they come into your, into your circle for a moment, and you're talking with them and you're being cordial, and then they walk away, and then, you know, you say, that guy's a clown, you know? He never did that. I never saw him do that after somebody left the room. And he just, it was, you're right, he was, whoever he was is who he was. And you didn't leave the room and have him talk about you behind your back. If he had something to say to you, he would say it to you. And I'm with you, man. I really appreciate people who are capable of doing that. And that's a hard thing to do. For him, he was always upfront. He was always honest. And I think if he had an issue with you, he would tell you. That's a quality that for a lot of us is very difficult to do, to just tell somebody right to their face what they think of you. And he could do it, but in a way that you didn't feel like was threatening. You know, you just felt like he was saying matter-of-factly how he felt. And I think that's a terrific quality to have. But he never, ever said anything about a person behind their back after they left the room. And that was 10 years of being around him. I never saw that happen once. And you guys know, you work with people, you know people. It happens, right? Humans do that stuff all the time, where they just they have something to say about a person after they leave the room, but they won't say it while that person is there. Ed would say it. And usually it wasn't malicious. It just he was very honest about who he was and how he felt.
I can't believe we haven't even really talked yet about his love for Notre Dame football and what that meant for him. Like you would have thought that he went to Notre Dame because, and I'm sure it's the whole South Side old school Catholic connection in the way that this city always has held Notre Dame in that kind of esteem because of those very understandable reasons. He felt a kinship with Notre Dame football that was much, much closer than perhaps people knew, because that was really his other thing. It was baseball, it was White Sox baseball, and it was Notre Dame football.
You know what? Now that you mention this, I'm kind of pissed, because he said to me multiple times, he's like, let's go to a game. We're going to go to a game, and we're going to walk out of the tunnel with the players. I'm like, well, yeah, I want to do that. And now I didn't get a chance to do that. But they loved him there. And I don't know who he knew at Notre Dame other than Charlie Weiss. I remember he was a pretty good friend of his, and Charlie came to the booth a few times that I can remember, at least. So they were close. But he was tied in with that university, and I believe he had told me in the past that he was planning to go there, or I don't know if baseball came up or what happened. I do recall a story one time of him saying that Notre Dame was a possibility for him. And I don't know what kind of grades he got, but Ed Farmer was a very intelligent person. That guy is really, really smart, and he could have gone there. I'm guessing his grades were good enough. I don't think a lot of people know that about him, but that was not a stupid guy. Ed Farmer was a brilliant person, and could remember a lot and remembered you. You know, I remember faces. I'm really good with that. I'm not always great with remembering somebody's name, but he was really good about that. He would know your face, he would know your name, and sometimes he would know things about your family that you may have told him. So that's just I could see him very easily being a student at Notre Dame. And I thought he said at one point that was a path he was going to take, but he ended up playing baseball.
Talking with Chris Ronji here on the Bernstein and McKnight Show. You know Chris Ronji, former White Sox pre- and post-game host, and a dude here on the Score for a good long time.
A dude.
You're just a dude, yeah, man.
Just a dude.
Just a stand-up dude. I wanted to ask you...
I'm sitting down right now.
Well, you could stand up if you need to.
Let's not go that far.
Okay.
So I'm
sorry.
I wanted to ask... So Sundays at the ballpark were always one of my favorites, but I think they were a little bit different for me than they were for you, because Sundays I still had some of White Sox Weekly to do. So I didn't get to hang out with Ed and with DJ on Sundays, but he would always, when I saw him on Sundays, right before the game, he would always tell me, Connor, I didn't see you at Catholic Mass this morning. And I never... You know, I was like, I know, Ed. I know you didn't. I was here. Like, he would just always tell me. Spring training. He would look at me. He'd be, you know, eating with players or something like that, where he's probably not supposed to be, but he's Ed Farmer, so he can be anywhere he wants. And he'd say, you know, Connor, if you want to, we're going to Catholic Mass before the game, right over at, you know, and he'd have the streets for you down in Glendale or something. And he was just always trying to pitch me on going to Catholic Mass. And I just wondered if he did that with you.
Well, no, he knew I wasn't Catholic, so I didn't have to do that. But he was always trying to get me married. Like every female, like anybody, it didn't matter, you know, as long as they were of age, would come into that room, and if I was in there, and they would leave, he'd say, "What about her? She's a nice lady." I'm like, Ed, will you just stop? I'll be fine. I'm gonna be okay. You don't have to. You have to hook me up with everybody that comes in this room. But yeah, he was always trying to make sure I had a lady. I think he wanted me to.
I'm trying to remember when and where did he tell the story about boys coming over in high school to date his daughter? There's a famous Ed Farmer story where he had, like, he would, depending on how they presented themselves at the front door, and if they said, if they, it was like a very formal way of doing it, and he would close the door, he would send them away and make them come back and do it again. Like, he was very protective of his only child, and he had some sort of protocol, a classic Farmio fashion, where there was a way it was to be done if you were to come calling to date his daughter.
Can I tell you that I don't know if I heard that story, but all of it checks out. Like, every bit of that. You're telling me that happened, and I'm going, yep. There's no.
Yeah, it was something. It might have been on. It might have been Steve Dahl. I'm trying to remember exactly where it was. It might have been Steve
Sounds
Dahl.
Right.
But he might said, know
something. Yeah, Steve would probably know something where Farmio would answer the door, and he says, "Well, that's you didn't approach appropriately. You didn't call me Mr. Farmer. You didn't ask. And so what I want you to do is I want you to walk back to your car, and you're going to get back in your car, and now you're going to then we're going to do this over again, and you're going to walk back to the front porch, and we're going to and like he would intimidate the hell out of these guys." Just because they didn't do it quite right.
Yeah, I could see him opening the door going, "You want to try that again?"
Right.
You go back to the car and start over. I could absolutely see him doing that. I don't think I ever heard that story, but it's phenomenal. He was just okay. So, you know, like I mentioned at the top, he was a tall dude and he had his health problems. So, it was hard for him to get around a lot. And I'm sure that in terms of stature and size, he wasn't, when I knew him, I'm sure he wasn't as imposing as he had been, you know, 25, 30 years ago. Right. So, I found him to, you know, you could see an intimidating person in there. And I think that in his mind, he still felt that way, where he could intimidate you that way. And and that story it would be a perfect description of who he was. And there's no malice in that. He wanted his daughter, and he thought that he could make you be respectable to her, and he was setting a precedent very early on. And I can absolutely see him doing that. And he was an odd dude. Ed was a very strange person also, but of all the people I knew, there were very few that were as generous and were as kind-hearted as he was. He really, honest to God, was like that. And I know people say that about people all the time when they die. They'll say, well, you know, this guy lit up the room, and he was just a really generous and thoughtful person, but Farmio was, and especially if you were in with him. You know, when my dad was really sick, every day he would ask me about him, and he would ask about how my mom was doing and everybody else. Every day he would ask for his own health problems for a long time.
I want to mention this from the 319, who heard a story about him, who says when boys would phone the house, he would make them hang up and call back to properly say hello to him and or his wife.
Yep.
So I guess his peeve was like, "Hello, is Shanda there?" It would have to be, "Hello, Mr. Farmer," or "Hello, Mrs. Farmer. This is so and so. May I please?" And he said, and then he would tell them his daughter wasn't home, and he would hang up.
That's him. I know that guy.
Yeah, yeah.
That's great.
He was the best. He really was. And this is another thing I want people to know, because I had this said to me a lot. I don't know if you ever ran across it at all, Connor, but listening to the broadcast between Ed and DJ, DJ's goofy. Ed is subtle. He's dry humor. Okay. And the two of them, I want people to know, the two of them got along very, very, very well. Because I used to have people say, "You can tell by the way they talk to each other that Ed doesn't like DJ or DJ doesn't like Ed." And I would say, "No, you're wrong." Like, I'm telling you right now, they loved each other. They really, truly did. I'm telling you this. And a lot of people wouldn't believe it. Maybe it didn't come across on the radio. But They had at minimum a ton of respect for one another, but it was more than that. I mean, they were friends, and from what I understand, and I can't speak for DJ, but I understand he's pretty heartbroken right now, and I would imagine he is, because they worked together for so long. But I do want people to know that those two really, truly did like working with one another. I'm not kidding, and I'm not just saying it so that he looks good now. They liked each other a lot, and I think people should know that.
Yeah, I'm glad you pointed it out, Chris. They did. Obviously, I always told people when they would ask kind of the same thing, I would just kind of say, you can't do what they did unless you loved one another, you know, unless you really had a relationship that could support what they were doing together on the broadcast. And I kind of looked at the broadcast as evidence of the trust and care they had for one another. I think, too, what's also worth noting, and I think, Chris, you probably share some of this as well, Ed was obviously a caring guy. Like, he would ask you about your dad, he'd ask you about your mom, and you know, he actually cared about the response. But what's worth noting, at least as I knew him for the little bit that I did, there were a lot of people who cared for Ed. And it's not that he asked them to do it, and it's not that he necessarily even needed it at times. But whether it was DJ looking out for him, members of the White Sox organization who would just kind of look out for him, or cops that would come up and check on him and see if he needed a ride somewhere or wanted to take him to the airport or something like that. He had relationships with everybody in that way. And I bring it up because the fact that Ed Farmer earned the number of relationships he did, where people wanted to help him, wanted to care for him, and wanted to make sure that he was doing well, that I think matters some. And I think it's, I just think it's worth saying about the man.
And everything you're saying there is 100% true. There is not a person that I've ever met in my entire life that had, no matter how fast he would drive, had no chance of ever getting a speeding ticket.
None.
Seriously,
lucky him.
They would pull him over and be like, "Oh, yeah, go right." He would either talk his way out of it, or they would know who he is and they'd just say, "Oh, have a great day." And that Ed Farmer used to drive really fast, like really fast all the time, no matter what. He would make it to O'Hare in like 20 minutes somehow. I don't know how he did it, but you're right. People were always looking out for him. And that's because he treated them well, and, mm-hmm. you know, he would bring them up to the broadcast booth. Connor, you were there for a bit. You saw that it didn't matter what time of game it was. You opened the door to his booth, and there were 50 people in there.
Yep.
And it wasn't just people that the team had brought up. You know, because teams do that. They will sell experiences or whatever, or they'll treat clients, and they'll, you know, sponsors, and they'll bring them, "Hey, I'll take you down to the broadcast booth. You can see what it's like," and they'll bring them in the room. Some of it was that, but a lot of it was just people he knew that he would offer to come up, and he wanted to share what he was doing with everybody. He wanted to share the game with everybody, and he brought them all up there. I can't tell you how many times he would get passes for people to come upstairs, and he was always wanting to give that to everybody, and I think in return, everybody wanted to give back something to him.
Chris Ronji, we appreciate the time, man. I think it's really important that we reiterate what you said when we started to talk to you, just how you had intended to talk to Farmio, intended to maybe come in and see a game with him. It's advice well taken in these times, that if there are people out there, no matter who they are, no matter what age, if you feel compelled to pick up a phone, to send a text, to reach out, it is absolutely the right and human thing to do for them and for you and for everybody involved. So I think it's certainly good advice. And sorry for your loss.
Real quick, earlier today, you know, like everybody else tweeting about Ed, I tweeted a photo of him, and that was from when I did see him when the Sox were in town, and that was May of 2018, I want to say. And I took a photo of him, and I took a photo of DJ, and I think I probably tweeted it out that night. But the photo of him laughing, like, I want people to know what he was like a little bit. There are a lot of times he's broadcasting a game, okay, and it may not come out in his voice, but that smile that he's got in that photo, like, he looked like that a lot. He was laughing a lot. You just couldn't tell he was laughing because he was having such a good time. And I didn't realize when I was sitting down in that moment, as I guess most of us don't when we're with somebody for the last time, usually, you don't realize that's the last time. But I'm glad I've got that. I'm glad I got that I could share that with you, so you could see it. It's just that's how he looked a lot of times when he was broadcasting. He with a smile, and even if you couldn't tell, he was having fun. He was always having a lot of fun.
Chris, I'm glad you have that too. That is really awesome. I'm really glad you spent some time with us this morning. Thanks a ton.
You got it, boys. Be safe, okay?
Sure, we'll do.
You too. Be well, Chris.
Love you.
Love you, too. That is Chris Ranji, our former colleague and the longtime White Sox pregame, postgame host on these airwaves. I want to mention tomorrow, Dan Zimborski of Fangraphs is going to join us at 10 o'clock. Dan Durkin did some awesome Bears Nick Foles breakdown for The Athletic. He's going to tell us how Matt Nagy might be scheming up his new quarterback at 11. And we will continue our investigation, our retroactive investigation of one of the most fascinating baseball teams ever, the 1986 Chicago White Sox. It will be Steve Psycho Lyons joining us at 11:30 tomorrow as we continue to do some stuff. And I had some great midway things to do today about the potential casting of a Tiger King movie or miniseries, whatever this is going to be, and some of the names that are now involved. So I look forward to getting to that tomorrow as well. We are Bernstein and McKnight, and we're going to, if you missed it before when we played the White Sox Ed Farmer tribute, it is really, really good stuff. We're going to roll it again in just a couple of minutes. If you missed it, you're going to want to hear it. You got the score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
Thanks to Dan Evans, thanks to Ryan Dempster, thanks to Chris Ranji and our production staff doing a wonderful job, as well as Awoski Camp and Diaz, Mitch Rosen and Shane Reardon, everybody doing what they can do to help out. Thanks to everybody who helped remember Ed Farmer. It's a sad day. Perhaps the Chicago White Sox did the best as far as a produced piece of memory right here. This is what they did. This is the Chicago White Sox remembering Ed Farmer.
Very pleasant. Good afternoon, Chicago. Alongside Darren Jackson, Ed Farmer. Glad you're with us, friends. Turn on the fireworks. Sox win! Sox win! Paul Brother, what a game.
I just love the game of baseball. My mom got me a glove. It was a glove she bought at a five and dime store at Kresge's. I learned how to play catch with Charlie Thompson across the alley in the neighborhood, 79th and Francisco. It was a way I could get through things because I didn't speak well. I was 5 years old and I didn't know how to pronounce words. And my dad said to my mother one day, he goes, Edwards is a little slower than the other kids, you know. So it was a way for me to break through that barrier and have people notice me. And my uncle loved the White Sox. My godparent took me to see him play, and I was hooked at Comiskey Park. My address has been 35th and the Dan Ryan since I was 11 years old, basically, because I used to ride the bus up 35th Street with Tommy and come to the ballpark here at Shields and 35th. That's how he got here. And Tommy and I would get here early. We'd take the tickets. Because we were juniors, we could cash the ticket in, and then we could have a couple of hot dogs during the game with the refund we got for a box seat. I wanted to be the best player in my neighborhood, and I think I became that. And I had a scholarship to St. Rita. I also played on the basketball team, but I had a deformed left knee since I was born. And I really didn't want to play football, but baseball. I wanted to be the best baseball player, one of them in the city. That expanded to being one of the best baseball players in the state. My mother, Marilyn, no doubt about it. She honed me to a fine edge. I walked into Comiskey Park, and I told my mother, I said, someday I'm going to play here. She goes, Edward, if you're good enough. And I got to play here and was an all-star here for the White Sox.
From the Chicago White Sox, pitcher Ed Farmer.
One reason the White Sox have enjoyed good success thus far this season would be that man, the big right-hander Ed Farmer, coming on in the bottom of the sixth inning. As Rose, it's a bouncer down to Randolph. Willie over to Yount, one, and back to first, double play.
And when I went to the All-Star game, I had 17 saves. I went from pitching better the year before, saving 14 games, and I saved 30, setting the club record here for saves. And I was actually bleeding internally with the cyst popping in my kidneys, from polycystic kidneys. It's the number one genetically passed disease in the world. And my mother, she had that. And, she was gone at 37. And I inherited that gene, and so did three of my brothers and sisters.
My good friend Ed Farmer has worked tirelessly to promote the organ and tissue donor program. For almost 20 years, we have worked together to register people for this meaningful program.
He's the voice of the White Sox, but he's also the voice of humanity.
So my brother Tom gave me a kidney transplant 28 years ago, gave me his kidney. He walked in and it looked like a great shark had bit him in half. You know, he had this big scar around his belly button up to the back, but it actually was an identical match. So saved my life. My brother Tom, yeah.
And Tim has four home runs, he's driven in 14. And the pitch swung on high, deep to left. Got a chance. There's a track. It's down. Game-winning home run. Light it up. Sox win.
This is a great seat. Place. It's a boy whose dreams growing up as a White Sox fan. It is. It's great to call the game.
Game-winning home run by Anderson is fifth. White Sox were down fast 9-2 at one point.
This is something that doesn't happen to everybody, and I understand that. It's great to be a White Sox fan. Well, it's a family here. That's what it is. I've got a great partner with Darren Jackson. We get along great. My closest friend outside my family. For my partner and me, we want to win. You can hear it in my voice. I don't come to lose a baseball game.
The 0-1. Alonso swings. Line drive left field. That's down for hit. One run scores. Up with it. A hesitant throw. Sox win! Sox win!
I'm here to do one job. Do the broadcast. Call the White Sox winner. Hopefully get to the playoffs in the World Series again. For all the fans, because I'm a huge White Sox fan as well.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.